spent this year as a as starting point guard for the University of Grace. And Tyler is a certainly a role model to a lot of guys, hopefully in camp, but certainly people that you know, people that you've met. He was quite a few newspapers over the course of the year, and national TV, and all sorts of cool things that, that Tyler experienced in Michigan University's first conference championship and NCAA tournament berth. So Tyler's going to introduce what we're going to try to do in the next few minutes. Following Tyler, Shulman and I will try to shed some light on a few questions that we think about all the time, and certainly are most likely on your minds as well. So please give your undivided attention first to Tyler, and then to what we have that will ensue following Tyler's presentation.
Awesome. Reshus, Rabbi Israel, Rabbi Shulman. Very excited to be here. So first things first, being a good roommate and being a good teammate is so chashuv, and people just throw it to the ground and think it's not the biggest deal. You know, being a Talmud Chacham, this and that, that's a huge deal. This is where it's at right now. So you guys came to the right place, and yeah. So here we go. First thing, when I was in YU this past year playing ball for the team, we played against players who were from all different sects of different religions, different places, and they didn't really know what Jews were, some of these people. So when we played against these guys, our actions represented the Jewish people. So we did a few things on the court that I think we all can take notes from and all try to copy and imitate. A few things we did is another player from the other team, he falls to the ground, and we pick him up. That's like one of the things that YU ball does. So there's actually a tweet given by this guy named Steph, not Steph Curry, random guy, and he said, "Thanks for helping me out, guys. Such nice people. #YU Athletics," or not hashtag, whatever the Twitter sign is. And you see three YU players helping this guy up. So that's not something special that we're doing. That's kind of an obligation that we have as Jewish people. And it's not just limited to non-Jews. It's also for us. You know, if Nicole, you play ball here, someone falls, you pick him up. A great story that happened was after the championship game, as soon as we won, our coach said in the timeout before in the huddle, he said, "You guys are going to win. You guys can win in two ways. You can celebrate, go nuts. This is the first time you guys won in history. Or you could be mensches." What did he say? He said, "You can take the ball, put it to the ground, and go celebrate with your team, shake hands with the other team, and that's it. Be mensches." So that's what we did. I had the ball, 3 seconds to go in the game, 2-1. You know, most teams go like this, they chuck the ball up in the air, they get so excited. We placed the ball on the ground, we ran to shake hands, and we did a kiddush Hashem. And last story before we go into the amazing questions for Rabbi Shalom and Rabbi Israeli is in the tournament game, we played against a team called York. There was one guy on their team who was very chutzpahdik. He didn't know the way of the Derech Torah. He didn't know how to have good midos, unfortunately. And he was saying some not nice things to me. You know, giving me a little curse word, some not nice things. So I laughed it off whenever I played my game. They won. After the game, I gave a huge hug. I said, "Great game, great hustle, you played amazing." So I told my mom exactly this story. And she said to me, like, "Why'd you do that? What's going on here?" I said, "Ma, you know, I'm a Jew. I have an amazing life. I have Shabbos. I have this and that. I'm living an awesome life. I'm happy. I'm here to do Kiddush Hashem, to do the right thing." And that's what we did. And it takes us a long way. So I'm going to give a quote, and then we're going to start with questions. So here we go. "Competitiveness and midos are not mutually exclusive. You're allowed to have both." Here's the big chiddush. You're allowed to have both on the court. You can play very competitively, like these two rabbanim do, and also be mensches. So without further ado, we're gonna give the questions right now. And I'm going to stand over here, if that's okay. And, okay, here we go. So first question we have is, what is the most challenging and rewarding experience that you've ever had on a basketball team or a sports team. And we're going to go first with Rabbi Shulman. They're too humble. This is me, though, right?
Rabbi Shulman. Okay, don't have to stand up. Okay. Everyone see me over here? Is it all right? Okay, great. Awesome. A lot of times when you're part of a team, in the moment, you tend to get wrapped up in all the details and all the drama and all the small moments along a season, a game, in the locker room, outside the locker room, on the court, off the court. But I think, ultimately, the most rewarding aspect of being part of a team, a winning team, a losing team, all those hours of sweat, tears, laughs, practice, games, bus rides, walks down to the courts here, back and forth, hot sun, cold days, early mornings, late nights, whatever it is, ultimately for me personally, you know, the greatest reward are the relationships that you build on and off that court. The people that you play with, the teammates that you have, the moments that you share together, both successful moments and hard moments, are forged bonds that can't be recreated. And that's why you'll find, God willing, one day, you'll be, you know, old, middle-aged, have kids running after you, and all of a sudden you'll bump into some random dude in the supermarket, or you'll walk outside in the streets of Israel, and all of a sudden you'll see some person you haven't seen for 25 years. And all of a sudden, even though you haven't seen that person in decades, there'll be an instant connection and an instant relationship that'll be back just like that. I had it a few months ago. One of my former teammates showed up in school, and he was donating an ambulance to Israel. And I hadn't seen him in a few years. And the second that we saw each other, it was like nothing had ever changed, but everything had changed at the same time. Our relationship with each other was just where it was so many years later, and yet we both have families, we both have jobs, we both try to pretend to be mature, responsible people in the world, and as a result, I can't tell you my exact record, I can't tell you exactly every single detail, every single game. I can tell you moments, and I can tell you, you know, the harder and the easier and the better, but the relationships will stick with you for life. So I think even as a parent or as a person looking from the outside, I think that's why encouraging, you know, teenagers and young children to get involved in team sports is such a win. Because aside from all of the physical benefits, there's so many benefits socially and the relationships that are built that I think can last a person for a lifetime. So I would say that's the most rewarding.
Yes, Post Rabbi Shulman, when I think back to a lot of the games that I played in high school, I can remember most of the details and most of my records and most of the games that I played. So I think that's where Rabbi Shulman and I differ. But what I will say that Rabbi Shulman is spot on with are the moments that make up a season that become like the piece of the package. That when you look back at the end of a year and you look back at what you've accomplished, so you look back at a tremendous amount of growth. Again, on the court and off the court, which of those two things are more important? So that's ultimately for you to decide. We try as hard as possible that what happens off the court is much more important than what happens on the court. And the relationships you have and the way that you speak to people, you know, as a result of the games that you play, is you know, something that propels us forward. I worked in camp for a few summers in high school, and one of the most jarring experiences that I had, I was a counselor in Morishah, and one of the summers that I was a counselor there, so there were two counselors on staff that the previous season had gotten into a horrible fight in the middle of a game. And I remember distinctly, and as we were approaching the summer, so I knew that both of these guys were coming to camp, and I knew that this was going to be like, you know, we were excited for what the first interaction was going to look like. Were they going to come to each other and, like, hug it out? Were they going to forget about it? Were they going to become good friends afterwards?
You know, it was two guys that were hotheads that were both excellent athletes. And, you know, you guys could probably, you know, whatever fight it was on a Saturday night, it was DRS after, or it was Shalhevet, or if it was TBC Frisch, or whatever it might have been. And there was, you know, God forbid, it should never happen, but there was a, you know, there was a fight that took place. So you remember it very distinctly. So we were all, you know, we walked into the to the sports shack in Camp Lorshan. We were not excited, but we were nervous about what was going to happen when these two guys saw each other. And what we witnessed was something that was absolutely extraordinary. And they just came together. It was such a natural friendship. And I asked one of them afterwards, you know, dude, like 2 months ago, you wanted to take this guy's head out in front of 500 people in the middle of the T-neck, and now like. You're his best friend. You know, like, what happened over here? So he explained to me that when he plays, when he's on the court, so it's, you know, he transforms his personality. He's another person. And when the whistle blows, he said to me, so when the whistle blows, moments after the whistle blowing, and the game progresses, so I'm crazy, I'm an animal. But the second the game ends, I totally transform who I am. Yeah, I got into a fight with this guy, and I went for a layup, and he hit me really hard, and I fell to the floor, and he didn't help me up, and I got in his face, and our parents went at it in the stands, and all of these things happened. But when I saw him at the end of the day, I realized that there's so much more than what's going on in the court, and it was one isolated incident that took place just a little bit, just a little while ago. Those guys are friends to this day, and I think back to that moment very frequently in terms of what happens to us on the court. I personally struggle with this. I imagine many of your Madrichim and probably a lot of your Bayim struggle with this also, and we'll get to it in a second. But we want to win, right? We want to go out there and we want to win. We want to drop, we want to score points. We want to get to the basket. We want to draw fouls. We want to play as competitively and as intensely as possible. And sometimes it takes us over. And sometimes we raise our voice. And sometimes we say things we shouldn't say. And sometimes we get into conversations and arguments that we want to avoid at all costs. But at the end of the day, you have to be able to take a deep breath and pull yourself out of that situation and say, wait a second, is this that important that it's something that's going to ruin a friendship over? And I think if you're able to do that, so you're able to take the proper viewpoint, the proper mindset as to what sports are able to do for you and the role that sports can play in your life. I have parents of students now of mine that that remind me about moments that I had on the court in high school. And they come up to me frequently and they say, remember this game, remember that game. I teach their children. I'm their children's rebbe. I see them all the time around my neighborhood and we have a nice relationship. If they were to remember me as an absolute animal on the court, and now I'm teaching their child in front of a classroom, there would be something that wouldn't be so symmetrical about that. And you know, at a young age, I definitely struggled with it more. Now I pull myself out of the situation and take a deep breath and try to, like, just put myself into a frame of mind where I can, okay, like, scoring is important. Getting a foul call is important. Okay, but being a mensch is even more important. And that's the most rewarding thing. So walking away from a game, I personally think, and, like, having a struggle, and you want to yell at a ref, and you want to, you know, you want to look at a ref and give him that sarcasm and, like, that was the worst call ever. You know, you're not screaming at the ref, you didn't curse, right? But at the same time, you're like, you're getting under a referee's skin. But coming out of that situation, being able to say, I was a mensch, is something that is invaluable and something that you can apply to all areas of life. And that sports really allows to facilitate for us.
Great. So Rabbi Israeli just brought up the next issue that we face. And especially right now, NCSY Kol HaBol, which is the quote I mentioned before, that competitiveness and midos. How can you have both? So the question is, you want to win the game, you want to do whatever it takes to win the game, because we hate losing, right? No one here likes losing. So the question is, how are you able to play your hardest, give everything you got, while at the same time being a mensch? So Rabbi Israeli brought up the problem and gave a little bit of a solution, but we're going to try to give a little more details.
As a little kid, I was like that little kid that like walk away from the plate and like mutter things to myself about the umpire, and sometimes a little bit too loud. So when I was 8 years old and I said, oh, that guy needs glasses, loud enough for the umpire and the entire team to hear, So that probably wasn't the best idea, and I don't think the umpire appreciated it at the time. In fact, he threatened to throw me out of the league at that moment, and you know, I don't think most 8-year-old children are supposed to say things like that, but I guess I watched too much TV or something as a kid. I'm not exactly sure where I got that from. But I remember very clearly that when I came to Israel to learn yeshiva for the year, so there was an intramural league, and I would play in the intramural league. And my first game, I had a great team, and my first game playing in intramural league, I remember very vividly. I could tell you who the referee was, not on tape and not publicly, but I could tell you after. I could tell you exactly who the referee was. And, like, you know, it was another guy in yeshiva volunteering his time to ref the games. And, you know, I personally thought he was doing an atrocious job. And instead of keeping that to myself, I let him know. I'm like, you're terrible. Like, you just, like, get off the court. Like, it's horrible already. And I told him that a number of times throughout the game. And, you know, after the game, everything was fine. Everything was good. And I, you know, I went back to my room, and my team won, obviously. I think I threw alley-oop on an inbounds play to the biggest guy in the entire world to win the game. That was it. And I got back to my room, and I felt terrible. I felt lower than I've ever felt in my entire life. And even though it was a great pass, and I wish it was on video, and I sort of wish there was, like, a drone in the air to see it, but I felt terrible. And I said to myself right then and there, I said, I'm spending all my day sitting and learning in yeshiva, trying to develop who I am, trying to become a better person. And then the second I walk onto the basketball court, I, like, unleash and say whatever I want to another human being. And in that moment, I said to myself, if I can't get that together, if I can't learn to control that part of me, if I can't, as Rabbi Israeli was saying, hone that animal a little bit and guide it. So I said to myself, then I'm not going to play. That's what I said to myself. And over the years, that's my number one priority when I go on the court. There are obviously moments that are harder, and there are obviously moments that are easier. There are moments that I serve as a better example of that, and there are moments probably where I serve as a worse example of that. But in my head, when I step onto the court, I'm not stepping out as a separate basketball player and a separate person who goes and learns Torah and tries to be a better Eben Hashem, but I'm trying to be a better Eben Hashem on the court also. And yeah, there are certainly moments that you're going to be in a game and a ref is going to make an atrocious call. Terrible. And you know what? You could feel wronged, and you could feel like the guy's after your team and after your family and after your mom and dad and grandma and grandpa. You can feel all those feelings and everything like that. But in the end of the day, A, practically, you going nuts is not going to do anything. That's just simple. And B, on a more important level, if you then, just because the guy is not an actual professional NBA referee and didn't actually see what happened and did their best and made a call that you disagree with, so now you're gonna unleash on him and treat him like worse than like the dirt of the earth. That's not who we are, and that's not who we're striving to be. And nobody in this room wants to be that guy. And I guarantee you that we can all think of people in our minds that we've seen in action in life that we know that they are that guy. And nobody wants to be that guy, because everybody sees that person as like, that person, as great of a ball player as they are, and as wonderful as a human being they may be off the court, everybody, when they see that person, takes like a double take and is like, whoa, that was nuts. And everybody sees that and is like, that's ridiculous, because we all know it. But in the moment, it's sometimes harder to separate yourself out. So, you know, my goal when I got on that court is to be the same person on the court and off the court. To be a good person there and off. And just like off the court, sometimes we struggle. On the court we can struggle too. But I think having that direction, having that goal, can certainly guide us and give us that ability to sort of improve on ourselves and to take control of ourselves and make sure that we're acting and presenting ourselves in the way that we want to present ourselves to other people.
Okay. I'll make a confession in front of all of you that I think about pretty frequently. I play a lot of basketball for somebody that's my age that has a full-time job. It's something that I love doing. It's something that I enjoy doing. It's something that I think is awesome. And people tell me all the time that I teach in school, and the fact that I teach and I enjoy playing basketball also. It's like such a nice thing. And I play basketball because I like playing basketball. You know, it's like something that's my hobby. It's something that I enjoy doing. So when we're in the realm of discussing how to deal with referees, I think personally, and again, this is the confession I'm about to make to you, the root of what the conversation is about when we interact with referees is the following. When you go up for a layup, okay, and you miss a layup, whether you get hit or not, so there are people watching, and you have teammates, and you have opponents, and you have people that are on the bench, and you have people that are scanning to see whether or not, well, can you go left, can you go right, can you make a move to the basket, can you shoot off the dribble, can you do all of these different types of things. And the second that you're stopped from doing one of those things, so you feel like your game is lower than it actually is, right? You go to the basket and you miss the layup, right? And there's like a hair of contact. So all of a sudden you look at the ref. What? How'd you miss that call? Did the ref really miss a call or did you miss a layup? And the reason that you're looking at the ref is because you want everybody else around you to see the fact I was hit. The only reason I missed that layup was because I got hit going up. And the root of that complaint has nothing to do with the fact that I actually got hit. It's that everybody else around me is watching, and everybody knows that this guy doesn't miss wide open layups. And if this is the guy that misses wide open layups, you know, that's not the guy I want on my team. This is a personal struggle that I have. Again, we all want to be as good as we could, and we all want to be as strong on the court as possible. And I imagine that some of you are replaying moments in your head that you guys have gotten into an altercation or looked at a referee the wrong way, right? Did you actually get fouled when you were going out for that layup? Did you actually get hit? Or are you looking at that referee to show everybody else that's watching whether or not, you know, that was actually what took place? After my ninth grade, I played Maccabi games for the GCC on the Palisades. And it was an amazing experience, and it was a ton of fun. And I played Maccabi baseball, and we played against the team from San Francisco in one of the play-in games for the seeding that takes place afterwards. And it was the middle of the sixth inning, and I got up with second and third, two outs, and you're down by one run. And I hate striking out looking. And it was always like my big, like, if I had like a poster in my room that was like the way that I lived my life, would have said, don't strike out looking. At least go down trying. And pitcher winds up second and third, two strikes. And I'm protecting the plate, and I foul off another pitch. And I was expecting a curveball to come at 1-2. And the pitcher throws a fastball literally right down the middle. And I was totally frozen, standing there in the box, and the ball goes right by me, literally right down the middle. And I turn around to look at the umpire, and I was like, what? I'm like, it was way outside. And the umpire looks back at me, and the catcher's still holding the ball. You know, okay, maybe the catcher framed it a little bit, but the catcher's still holding the ball right over the plate, right? But what would go through my mind as a ninth grader was, everybody else is watching me, and if I strike out looking, the second and third, in the bottom of the sixth inning, in a Maccabi playing game, there's no way I'm going to. The coach from next year's team is watching me play. So if he thinks that I struck out, why? Because there was a horrible call being made. Okay, so maybe maybe he's going to take me on next year's team. But if he thinks I struck out looking because I didn't want to even try, I didn't want to take a hack at a pitch right down the middle, he's not going to pick me onto next year's team. So I think that that's the root of a lot of these challenges that we face. Again, the goal is that after one deep breath, again, before we take one deep breath, it's very hard. It's very hard to get us in the zone of, wait a second, there's something much bigger than this, right? And we initially get hit and we think we were fouled and we don't get a call and we're all up in arms, we're all upset, right? And then we take that deep breath. And what happens after that deep breath? After that deep breath, do we admit the fact that we overreacted potentially, right? Do we admit the fact that I said something that I shouldn't have said? Some of you guys that have watched my basketball games, one of the things I try to do as much as possible, when another player on another team makes a great move or hits a great shot or plays great D or does something awesome, so I compliment them right away, right? Wow, that's an awesome take. Great shot. You know, like, awesome D. I'm going on a fast break and I lose the ball, right? And the second that guy stands in there to take a charge, and I dribble the ball off my foot out of bounds, so I see right to that, wow, that was awesome defense, right? And the reason I started doing that had nothing to do with the fact that I was older or grown up or a Rebbe or any of these things, was because it counteracts the exact opposite of what I was trying when I was in ninth grade, I struggled with, right? Now, what am I trying to do? You play great D, right? That was an awesome play. You made a great move to the basket. You finished really strongly. It's counteracting the mindset that I was stuck on when I was in high school, that everybody's watching me, right? And if I don't do this right, if I miss a layup, so I'm not going to get chosen for a team, or people are going to think I'm weak, or people are going to think I stink, or... Now I'm admitting on the court actively, wow, that was an awesome move. So somebody plays D and draws a charge, or I dribble the ball off my foot because I'm out of control or something. Great D, that's a great take. And I think that the more we positively comment and the positive situations that we put on our athletic activities, the better we're going to be on the court, and the more positive people we're going to be on and off the court, which is something that we try certainly to learn as players and learn as people and people that are trying to serve Hashem as best as possible. So, question three.
So moving away from the sports arena, we're going to take it to the dorms. The dorms are very, very chashuv also. This is where at night, you know, people are sleeping, people are this and that. And how are we going to act when the lights are out? So without further ado, the question is, what are common mistakes that roommates make in the dorms? Your shoes are showing me.
I think that the root of a bad roommate is the same thing as the root of the bad teammate. When a person lives in their own existence and is solely concerned with and focused on themselves, so those are the worst roommates, those are the worst teammates, and honestly, those are the worst people in general. The Gemara says that if a person is a Baal Chesed, so you can be certain that they are Yarei Shemayim, that they're God-fearing. And everybody asks, I don't understand, what's the connection? Can't a person be a nice guy, help other people, and not fear God? What does one have to do with the other? And I once read from Rav Volbi that the root of being a God-fearing person and the root of being a giving, kind person is really the same thing. It's a person who's focused and able to be sensitive to that which is outside of themselves. The same way that a person who's a giving and kind person is always looking outside of themselves to find that person who needs a hand, to look for that person who could use your assistance, who could find the people who maybe don't have somebody sitting next to them at lunch, or find the person who dropped their stuff on their way to shir and could use somebody to help them pick it up. So it's the same thing with our relationship with God. If we're solely focused inside, then we're not able, we don't have room to bring God into our lives. But people who are able to see outside of themselves are able to look around them and to see God's hand in their lives and able to influence their lives in that way. And roommates and teammates, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for that roommate who knows what you love and will just randomly just get you something just to make you happy. A teammate is a person who's just looking to pick you up anytime that you need that pat on the back. A person who's looking to help you out anytime that you could possibly need, who knows you almost as well as you know yourself. People who are self-absorbed and focused inwardly, totally, they're not sensitive enough to even realize that there are other people surrounding them. Forget about recognizing their qualities, what they like, what they don't like. Forget about being sensitive to who they are and what they're about. They're just focused on themselves, and therefore nobody else matters. People don't matter, God doesn't matter, I just matter. That's all it is. And as a result, I think in terms of roommates, teammates, people in general, we always want to be people that are open to the outside. People that are sensitive to what's going on around us, whether it's our best friend and our closest teammate, or it's somebody that we don't really have a relationship that's so strong yet. We want to be people that are open and sensitive to that, and always looking outside of ourselves to see what we can provide for somebody else. Those are the type of people you want to be around, and those are the type of people that ultimately will have the best influence on you, and ultimately you'll have the best influence on each other in terms of building each other.
I'll just talk a little bit more in terms of like practical things that certainly happen here. A lot of people here in this room probably have different schedules than others, whether it's guys that wake up early to play basketball in the morning at 6:30 in the morning, which I'm sure some of you do, or guys that come back from the base measures late at night, which I'm sure some of you do, or guys that are in the rooms in the middle of the day when people are taking naps or the like. When you have different schedules, so that lends itself to people in the dorm rooms that, you know, have different needs, have different things that are more comfortable for them and less comfortable for them. The first thing that I want to just briefly mention is lights on in the dorms. So I'm sure that many of you have had this situation come up in your dorm rooms, and some of you have probably been smiling and thinking about this exact scenario that took place. You were in the basement just late, one of your roommates was sick or not feeling well, and you came back, and you needed your stuff for the next morning, or you wanted to find something, right? And you walked in, and you opened the door, and when you opened the door, not only did you open the door and let as much light in as possible, but there were people outside that were listening to loud music, or there were people showering late at night, or doing whatever it was that they were doing, and you woke this kid up, and he's trying to sleep. He had a long day. He's not feeling so well. It's very hot. Won't deal today, whatever it may be. And you come back from whatever you're doing, and like Rabbi Shulman mentioned, so you're solely focused on what I need to get done right now. I need to find my this, that, and the other. And if I don't find that, I'm not going to be able to go to sleep tonight. And it doesn't matter if I'm waking somebody else up. It doesn't matter if I'm being inconsiderate to my roommates. And at the end of the day, what are you accomplishing? At the end of the day, you're walking into a room and you're waking somebody else up. Before ever, I try to work on this myself, as I had a lot of roommates over the course of the years, before I open that handle, when I come back at a time when people are sleeping, I plan for myself what it is that I need to do and how I'm going to do it in a way that's most sensitive for anybody in the room that might be sleeping. So I come back to the room at 11:45, and I was in the basement manager. I was hanging out at the traffic circle. I was doing this, doing that. I was doing push-ups somewhere. I was running around in the shop, or whatever it is that I was doing. Before I walk into that room, I'm not walking in there and looking for my towel and throwing things all over the place. And my phone is on loud, and I get a Snapchat as I'm walking into the room, and that wakes that guy up automatically. I know exactly what I need to get done in order to wake that guy up. In the mornings. Many of you guys probably wake up at different times. There are those of you that want to get to davening on time, those of you that never want to go to davening at all, and everything in the middle, right? And when somebody's alarm goes off and you're, let's say you say, you know what, I'm going to wake up early every single day for the rest of the summer, right? And I'm going to get the chakras 10 minutes early every single day. And for me to get the chakras 10 minutes early, I need to wake up at 7:15. And all of your roommates are sleeping, and you know you need to snooze four times, and all of your roommates are going to wake up. So think about what's going on over here. You're waking up your roommate so that you could get to davening 15 minutes earlier, right? So you're sacrificing something that's tremendously benevolent with Chavero for a few extra minutes of learning. And when we think about that scenario in front of us, when we think about that equation that we're staring at, so what makes more sense over here? Waking up the seven guys around me because I need to snooze, learn how to either wake up, or it might not be something that's most conducive for you and your roommate's relationships. We live in a dorm. We're high school boys, right? We're all in the same parsha over here. So I'll just speak from experience. And when I was my girlfriend, Nancy Sarkol, a few years ago, and I spent a lot of time here, so you come back to your dorm room, and you just played a basketball game, you just played a hockey game, you just came from a TO, and whatever it is, right? And your shoes smell terrible, and right, you walk into the room, you just want to sit down, and you walk into the room, and you sit on somebody else's bed. I imagine that's happened to somebody in this room, right? And I see the smiles going around, because it's not the most far-fetched thing that could possibly take place here. And when you ask yourself, what am I doing when I'm doing that? So whether or not that person cares about cleanliness or not, or whether or not that person is the most hygienic person or not, it's simply inconsiderate. And again, preparing before you enter that room is something that's crucial. So you'll take your shoes off outside and leave them outside to dry after you
played at 3 o'clock in the hot sun because your shoes smell disgusting, right? And the more we're thinking about our roommates, and the more we're thinking about these types of things, so the better those friendships are going to be. My closest friends to this day are people that I spent time rooming with, whether it was in Yeshiva in Israel, or whether it was during the summers, or people that were in my bunk in camp over the course of the years. And those are the relationships that are best, because some of the conversations that we've had in our rooms, just chilling, just hanging out, that's what makes a roommate. You walk into your room and your roommate says to you, like, wow, I just had such an inspiring conversation with the Madrich, or something Rav Schachter said today was just so unbelievable. Or did anybody notice that Rav Torsi at today's Siyum, he didn't want to eat meat because the fact that the 9 days are upon us or something that's so incredibly intense to Rav Torsi? And you're sitting there and you're what? That starts a conversation that allows for growth. This is not the base measure. This is room 4 that has a mouse crawling in on Saturday night, right? This is a dorm room. But the dorm room can turn into a base medrash. That's a place that a conversation can happen. This guy had a tough day today. You know, a pat on the back is something that goes a tremendous distance that we sell short sometimes, that can really impact somebody else, that can really pick somebody else up. And asking yourselves, how can I be the most considerate person and the most sensitive person I could possibly be to my roommates? In the mornings, in the middle of the afternoon, going to sleep at night, music, lights, whatever else it is that I'm doing in my room, what can be the, how can the best me come out in my room, and how can I interact with my roommates in the best possible way, is a question that mature kids ask themselves, and a question that can build friendships that can last a lifetime, that hopefully some of you are starting to develop here on the Yerama program.
Great, so we have about 5 more minutes. So in the next 5 minutes, we're going to take questions from you guys that are going to be answered, God willing, by Rabbi Israel and Rabbi Shulman. And also, if you ever have questions on your own, please come to any of these 2 Rebbeim. I'm sure they love to answer questions, or myself if you want to. So, audience, any questions on being a better person, better roommate, better person on the sports court?
I actually have a question, Tyler. How do you deal with, let's say, a more professional level?
Yeah, sure. Say it again one more time, sorry.
Isaac wants to know how Tyler deals with more professional refs. Tyler obviously plays college basketball. Tyler's referees are not, random guys that sit in the base membership in YU a whole year. And, like, this is, like, legit stuff, you know what I'm saying? Like, probably very little skin, very many tattoos that these guys, you know? These are, like, real dudes. So Isaac's question to Tyler was, how do you deal with this, knowing these people are getting paid? Knowing that these people have a job that is to referee games in a fair way? Tyler, please enlighten us.
Okay, so one, they definitely know what they're doing, and they are professionals. Even though it's D3, they are definitely mamish professionals in reffing. So, first thing is, understand that they know what they're doing, and they have a better view and perspective than we do. So, trust them, and just calm down. Don't get angry at a call, because they know what they're doing. If they miss something, you getting angry does absolutely nothing. It's going to actually hurt you, because the ref's not going to say, oh, this guy is the talker. Okay, I'm going to watch this guy. He said, boom, tech. It happened before. If you're not careful, it's for your own benefit that you stay silent and you respect the ref's calls. So, first thing you have in mind is your own benefit. And two, understand that he knows what he's doing. So just trust him. That's the 2 things, yeah. Any other questions? Don't be afraid. Do you have, like, time for 2 more, yeah. Andy, my man.
So
who? Rabbi Israel, Rabbi Shulman,
Tyler. Ask for Tyler.
It's for all of you. So when you know, like, your roommate don't click, like, right off the bat, like, you just, like, have too many things that are clashing, how can you find those connections that make your relationship better?
Yeah, so he wants to know, when you have a roommate that you clash with, your personalities aren't in line with one another, so how do you go about trying to find things that that you can connect on, that you can discuss, that can facilitate a friendship that's a friendship that should be a friendship of roommates?
Um, obviously there are people that you click with better, there are people that you instantly seem to have connection with, there are people that you share common interests with, and obviously those are easier roommates to have. But I think that something that we all have in common is that we're human beings, and that we're people that are trying to be good people, people that are trying to be caring people. So whether or not you guys have 100 things in common, or you have, maybe have one thing in common, I think that as a human being, I think that the goal has to be to do your best, to show interest in that person, to be friendly. You don't have to be best friends. You don't have to hang out on the weekends. You don't have to invite them over to your house. But at the same time, you can be warm and welcoming and kind and good to that person without liking the same basketball team. Obviously, there are people in the world that are a little bit easier to deal with than others, and sometimes you have somebody that's just difficult. But I think that even when somebody else is difficult, I think we have to hold ourselves to a higher standard and make sure that I'm doing everything that I possibly can. If they're not going to, you know, act in the same way, if they're not going to be there to reciprocate that relationship, so there's nothing that I can do. But I think that you want to be able to go to sleep every single night knowing that I did my best and I put my best foot forward and I tried. And, you know, hopefully, I think over time, if a person does that, I think relationships build and people see that you're well-intentioned and that you're caring. And I think that's able to bridge some of the gaps that might exist.
I'll just, before we close, I'll just try to answer your question and just, life, so you'll meet people that you clash with. And God willing, all of you are going to have jobs one day, and all of you are going to have parents and in-laws and children and children's parents and children's coaches and children's teachers. You're going to have people that you have to interact with and be as welcoming, warm, positive, friendly, caring person as you possibly could. What you guys are experiencing right now, certainly on the courts and certainly in the dorm rooms, is a classroom preparing yourselves for the next stage of life. You're all going to have jobs. You're all going to go to work. You're all going to interact with people that, you know, you're going to interact with bosses that are demanding of you, of coworkers that are demanding of you, of other people that are more demanding of you, less demanding of you, that you hate this and that and all sorts of things about them. And we have to do our best to try to, again, remove ourselves from the situation a little bit, take a deep breath, and see what we could do to make the best of the scenario. I think that as roommates and as teammates, so you're building slowly as 10th graders and 11th graders, so you're building yourselves to be able to interact with those experiences that are going to come in the future with force. You're going to be stronger, you're going to be better, you're going to be more mature because of many of the relationships you're making here on and off the court. The goal is, again, like Rabbi Shulman said, we're trying to be good people. We're trying to be good friends. We're trying to be caring, considerate, and sensitive to everybody around us. And the more we try, the better we try to do. Tomorrow I'll be better. And the next day I'll be better. And the next day I'll be better. And if each day I'm just trying to get a little bit more sensitive and a little bit more caring to somebody else, so that leads to something great. That leads to being a great person. And that leads to being somebody that everybody wants to be around and a guy that's just a good guy that you want to spend time with, that you want to room with in the future, that you want to play with in the future, that you want to be a friend for many years in the future. So thank you to Rabbi Israeli, Rabbi Shulman for their time. Speaking here in 5 minutes. So let's give you the base energy in 5 minutes. Michael Roy.